Fat is an obsession, a dirty word, a subject of national hand-wringing and our least understood body part. The Secret Life of Fat brings together historical perspective and cutting-edge research to reveal fat's true identity, an organ that is critical to our health. Written by Sylvia Tara, who holds a PhD in biochemistry and an MBA, Dr. Tara will be joining the Smithsonian Associates series Thursday, January 5th, 2017, talking about the secret life of fat. Whether we're young or old, male or female, whether it's an extra 100 pounds or the last 5, we think about it and torture ourselves over it every day of our lives. On the national stage, it sparks criticism, mockery, political debate, and a $60 billion industry dedicated to its elimination. And yet, we understand next to nothing about it. In The Secret Life of Fat, Sylvia Tara draws upon her biochemistry expertise to explain fat's multiple, misunderstood, and positive hidden functions. Joining me here on the Not Old Better Show is Dr. Sylvia Tara. And then, join us Thursday, January 5th at 6:45 p.m. in Washington, D.C. at the Dillon Ripley Center for Sylvia Tara and The Secret Life of Fat. Dr. Sylvia Tara, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Great to be here.
Good. Well, I have to tell you, I think one of the most interesting things about you, honestly, if I may say, is this combination that you bring to your work and this and your research, and that is that you have an MBA. Excuse me. At first, you have an MBA. You also have a PhD, but you got the PhD first and then went back and got the MBA, as I kind of read. I think that's a really interesting combination. Then you have this McKinsey healthcare management consulting background, and so you have a real strategic approach to controlling fat. Do you think that gives you kind of almost an edge in dealing with this and being able to help others kind of understand it strategically?
I think it does. I mean, I started as a scientist because I love science. I love solving problems. I love, you know, figuring out something that no one's gotten an answer to so far. And I love science in itself. So that was a natural way for me to go about my education, is focusing on science. And I also like to look at things at a macro level. So, you know, looking at amino acids and carbohydrates in real detail was fun, but you know, it's pretty myopic in the end. And so looking at a more macro level was of interest to me also. So I went into the business side of science. I didn't stay with research. And I think what it helps me does is it brings together two really important things. One is the scientific ability to do research and to go and dig and look for answers, and pairing that with the communication side that an MBA brings. So taking things very granular, very difficult to understand, and making it very easy to understand and communicate it in a clear way so that people can really dig in and understand it and find meaning in it. So I'm hoping that's what I achieved in the book, Secret Life of Fat, that I was able to do both. And much of the book is written in terms of stories, so not just giving out factual information like a textbook, but more, you know, what's the story of the scientist who discovered something, the story of the patient or the doctor. So using narrative to really communicate very deep insights about fat.
That's helpful to know. So let me back up for just a second and ask you, when you first begin attacking this issue and you begin thinking about it on this macro level and approaching it from kind of this interesting combination, as I say, kind of in a strategic way, what was it that you learned about fat initially that ultimately made this book so important?
Yeah, so I started looking at this book because I always struggled with weight. I mean, since I was a child, I gained weight very easily. And as I grew, I did more dieting. I would go on and off. I would gain some, lose some, and it was very frustrating. And I think a lot of people feel like they're in this boat. But additionally, I felt like I truly ate less than other people, and yet I would gain more weight. And I'd had this experience so many times watching my friends, even family members. They could eat, and they would not do much exercise, and yet somehow stay thin. And I finally just got really fed up with that observation. And I thought, I'm going to understand everything there is to know about fat. I'm a scientist by training. If anyone can understand it, I can. Mm-hmm. And I went on a 5-year journey to understand fat. And so I dug out scientific literature, probably around 1,000 articles that I read I talked to dozens of scientists around the world about their cutting-edge research on the fat. And what I was discovering was so astounding, I thought that I have to capture this in a book and I have to tell people. And probably the most astounding thing I learned was that fat is not just fat. We think of it as a reserve of calories. We have to get rid of this at all costs. And quite the opposite. It's actually this critical organ in your body. And I say that purposely, organ, in that it actually makes hormones and releases them into your system, much like an endocrine gland does. And by doing so, it has vast impact on your body. It has influence over our brain size, our brain functioning. It has influence on our immune system, our reproduction system, and our bones even are linked with healthy fat. And so knowing that, I think we have to change our perception of fat. I think we have to stop seeing it as such an enemy that we have to get rid of it. It's you know, something to just be reviled, and turn that around to really understand our fat if we really want to control it and manage it. And so that's the perspective I try to bring in the book to just help people understand what fat is, why you need to have it, and if you want to manage it and control it, you have to be as clever as your fat is to do that.
That's good. That's good. We are with Dr. Sylvia Tara. Dr. Tara is going to be at the Smithsonian Associates Series Program January 5th. That's 2017. That's next year, Dr. Tara. You're going to be joining us here in Washington, D.C., You've written this wonderful book called The Secret Life of Fat, The Science Behind the Body's Least Understood Organ and What It Means for You. And you referred to this, you referred to it just a moment ago as an organ. And I that word jumped out at me. I never really had thought of fat as an organ. And as an organ, we really do need to understand that there's a reason for its existence in our body. And we need fat.
Yeah, we absolutely need fat. In fact, people who don't have fat are a great illustration about why we need fat. There's a condition called lipodystrophy, which people lose their fat. They can't manufacture fat tissue anymore. And they have a lot of health issues. All their fats in their blood, they just continuously circulate, and they deposit in the liver and other places, and they get diabetes. They get a lot of health issues, these patients. And so you need to be careful when you say, I wish I could have no fat, or I want to get rid of my fat. It's actually quite critical. And even people who are very low fat levels, like with anorexia nervosa, they have a whole host of issues. You know, brain size is affected. Their bone health is affected. Fat's linked to so many organs in your body. It will really surprise you to know that. And so thinking of fat more like the organ that it is, I think it will help people appreciate it and, you know, also understand what it really takes to lose it. And fat as an organ has actually been known about for quite some years. I mean, back in the, I guess it was in the 90s, you know, when leptin was discovered at Rockefeller University, and that was the first hormone really classified as something that was released by fat and kind of switched the perception around right there. And since then, we've learned more about it. Adiponectin has been discovered that has a role in distributing fat, so clearing your blood of toxins and fat and helping fats in the blood guide to fat tissue and deposit. New York Times just did an article on aspirosin, another hormone that is released by fat that helps with glucose levels in the blood. So your fat's doing so much more than just sitting there. And actually, fat, in a way, controls itself because leptin, one of its hormones, has a direct link to appetite and metabolism. So when we lose fat, we lose leptin. And when we lose leptin, we get incredibly hungry. And our metabolism actually goes down also. So in a way, fat's trying to come back. It's trying to get you to eat. It's trying to slow down your metabolism so you lose less of it. And once you start understanding what fat's actually doing in your body, you can really start to maintain a diet plan much better because some of the hunger pangs you feel, some of the issues you're going through with having to eat less than other people around you, you know, even though you feel like you've lost weight, it starts to make sense and it helps you stay on a path for the long term once you really understand your fat.
Well, this really gets to this idea that biology plays a role, gender plays a role too. And one of the things that I read from you was that men and women have a very different reaction when it comes to exercise and food after they exercise. So you really learned that women need more food after they exercise and that's tied to this biology notion too.
Yeah, this is really a chapter dedicated to all women who have been frustrated at how much more men can eat compared to themselves. And I think I watched my husband just eat ice cream every day and stay as thin as he was in college. And so I took this on. I said, I have to understand why you can do that. So women, they really just deal with fat differently than men overall. I mean, number one is they partition more nutrients into fat than men do. So, you know, if you eat, say, 100 calories or so, women will partition more of that 100 calories, say 30 calories or so, into their fat versus men who will put less into fat. So no matter what, they're depositing more into fat. But they also use their fat more. And this is really interesting. During exercise, they'll burn more fat. But then after exercise, women release more ghrelin, which is a hunger hormone that comes from your stomach. And so they feel more hunger after exercise than men do, and they tend to overcompensate. And so there are tips in the book for women versus men. So for anyone who's been frustrated about this, any woman who's been frustrated about this, you know, tips for why it is that you have to diet a little harder than your male counterpart, why you have to watch yourself after exercise, not overcompensate. And truly, even during menstrual cycles, there's difference in appetite and the ebb and flow of the month, and how women, how they seek food, how their bodies handle fats and carbohydrates in their bodies. And so women our biology is very different, and it is harder for us. And the other major component that men have that's different is testosterone. Testosterone is a huge fat burner. And I actually review one study in the book, which is a study about men who take testosterone supplements versus men who don't. And they had men who didn't take any testosterone exercise 3 times a week. And they compared to men who didn't exercise but took testosterone supplements. And the men who didn't exercise but took testosterone actually gained more muscle mass and lost more fat than the men who were exercising 3 times a week.
Wow.
That's how powerful testosterone is. And so it's hard to compete with. And so I think, you know, as women, we just have to understand we're going to be a little fatter, and we're going to have to work harder than men if we want to stay thin. And you can never really compete one-on-one with your male counterpart.
One of the other things that we kind of have to understand is that not all fat is the same. And you talk a little bit about that in the book, too. You talk quite a bit about that, and that's the idea behind this subject of white fat and brown fat. And now there's even a kind of a beige fat, too. Is that
right? There are many different types of fat in your body. One type of fat is white fat. It's subcutaneous white fat that's right underneath your skin. There's another type of fat that is visceral fat, and that is the fat underneath your stomach wall. And that is actually can be pretty dangerous fat. It tends to be inflamed. It's linked to a lot of health issues like diabetes and cardiovascular disease. When you want to lose fat, those are the two types of fat you want to lose. Now, there's other kinds of fat as well. There's brown fat, and brown fat's around our heart. It's around our clavicle area, our spine. And brown fat, unlike white fat, burns energy instead of storing it. And it burns energy to make us warm. It produces heat in our body. And babies have a good amount of brown fat for that very reason. As we get older, we lose our proportion of brown fat. Now, researchers have found beige fat in our body, which is fat that's capable of turning brown, and it will do so upon exposure to cold and through exercise. And this is a new line of research now that researchers are looking at, is how to increase the amounts of brown fat in our body, which actually help burn calories. And there's other kinds of fat too. I mean, fat's actually quite critical. Our brains are very much made of fat. So the sheath around nerve cells that helps them conduct signals, that sheath is actually made of fat. So 85% of the sheath called myelin is made of fat. So our brains are very much linked to fat. And our cells, each and every cell we have in our body has a membrane around it that is also made of fat and cholesterol. So the two, you know, arch enemies that we think of in diet, fat and cholesterol, actually pretty much help hold us together. And so, you know, dietary fat's very important. You need to replenish your fat. It's used for all kinds of things in your body. But, you know, keeping in mind that the dangerous fat is visceral fat. The fat you want to lose is subcutaneous fat as well. And it's different from brown fat and beige fat.
That's really helpful. Thanks, Dr. Tara. One of the things that you said, I almost jumped right in, but you were really hitting on some excellent points. And that is this idea that there's that fat has a certain reaction to cold. And I think there's a myth that as we start to get into quote-unquote cold weather, we all tend to put on weight, yet fat can be subject to cold. And it can actually, this fat can actually be reduced through some cold weather activities. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so that's what the line of research is really looking at, is how do we increase, you know, brown fat in the body. Brown fat is something that keeps us warm, and it also produces heat. So this is a line of research is looking at how we can increase amounts of brown fat in our body, because brown fat actually produces heat and it burns up calories to produce heat. And they've seen that exposure to cold actually will activate brown fat, as will exercise. Exercise actually taps into beige fat, which produces a hormone called irisin, and that turns beige fat brown. So you can increase your brown fat through that as well. And so, you know, it could be that instead of tennis, we go for a cold swim every now and then. That helps us lose quite a bit of weight. And, you know, it takes some doing. I think you have to lead up to that. You have to do it for a while.
To cold weather swimming.
It's very exciting.
Yeah. That's the polar bear club, right?
Right. That's right.
Well, we are with Dr. Sylvia Tara. Dr. Tara is going to be at the Smithsonian Associates Program on January 5th, 2017. We're looking forward to your talk there. Without giving away too much, what else are we going to learn, and what else should we learn from your presentation on January 5th?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to know about fat, and really the purpose of my book, The Secret Life of Fat, is to educate people on all different areas of fat. I mean, one is that when we try to lose weight, it's actually, fat is very tricky. Fat is a very clever organ. It has ways to sustain on your body. through the hormones that it emits, it can reduce our metabolism, and it can increase our appetite. In fact, there's one study that shows that when people lose 10% of their body weight, they lose leptin, because fat emits leptin. Having less fat is now less leptin, and their appetites just go through the roof, and their metabolism's lower. They actually have to eat about 22% fewer calories than someone who hasn't lost weight, who's at the same weight as that weight reduced person, if that makes sense. And so, say if you have to lose 20 pounds to get to 180. Someone who was at 180 to begin with can actually eat more than you, because you've had to lose weight to get there. So yo-yo dieting has a big toll on us, and it's important for people to understand that once you've lost weight, you're not really going to be the same. And there might be a permanent change to your body, as a matter of fact, where you have to eat a little bit less than people who are at that weight naturally, and you might have to exercise more to stay on that. So weight maintenance is very important, and it's just about as hard as losing weight to begin with, staying at that low weight. The other really important component of the book is that we get fat in a lot more ways than people ever think. It's not just sloth and gluttony. We have bacteria in our body, and some of the bacteria we have is very good at extracting fat. And so if you have a microbiome in your gut, depending on the type and what it's composed of, you might be extracting a lot more calories out of food than someone who has a different microbiome. And there are ways you can tilt your microbiome to be more of a lean phenotype, if you will, and that's through eating a lot of salads and fibers, eating less fat, a little bit less carbohydrate. That will increase the diversity of bacteria in your gut and actually help you lose weight, not just through the calories, but by changing the bacteria composition you have. Our genes actually also factor into our weight, and there are certain genes that identify that either increase appetite or they actually create more fat cells. And so that's going to be an individual difference among people. You know, and gender is another one, as well as hormones. You know, we talked about gender and how women certainly gain more weight than men. Mm-hmm. But aging is another very big one. As we age, we lose our hormone levels. We don't have as much estrogen or testosterone or growth hormone. And that plays a lot of havoc on our weight. And not only how much fat we have, but where it's distributed. So women will get more fat around their hips and their thighs and a little bit around their belly as they age into their 50s. And men will get a lot more weight around their bellies and their neck and their back. And so our hormone levels as we age has a lot to do with why we get heavier. And what I'm hoping that part of the book does is that it stops this guilt around fat, because I think too much what the diet industry does is that, it's just simple to lose weight. You just follow these 10 easy steps. You eat a little bit less, you eat a little bit less carb, and you'll just lose weight. It's really not like that. And they infuse guilt into people, because there's this insinuation that if you can't do this, it's your fault. It's so easy to lose weight, and you must be a glutton. It's actually very tricky. And the older you get, the harder it gets. It's almost a force of nature that fat will come on us a little bit more. And in fact, there was one study done where the researcher looked at fat, and he noticed that people had to exercise 1.4 times more, or had to add 1.4 miles, every time he looked at joggers. So a jogger who was jogging, say, 10 miles, you know, so a week at age 30 had to do about, you know, 24 miles a week at age 40. So they had to add 1.4, you know, every year in order to stay at the same weight. And so it's just an illustration of how challenging fat is as we get older. It definitely wants to stay on a little bit longer compared, or a little bit, you know, more. It's very sticky on us as we age.
This is a fascinating subject, really. I could talk to you forever. I would love to do that, but I know you're going to be here in Washington, D.C. on January 5th. And so I'm going to look forward to seeing you and hearing from you there. I know you're going to be remaining on site at the Ripley Center following the presentation to sign books that are going to be available for sale, right?
That's right, yes.
Good. Well, we'll look forward to learning more from you there about this very tricky, clever, a part of us that has its own kind of memory and self-defense that I don't think we really understand at all, but really need to in order to live a more healthy life.
Yeah. And I think once you understand your fat, you'll appreciate it and you'll certainly be able to manage it better. I know it got me through. I lost 30 pounds just by having this knowledge. And knowledge is definitely power in this case. And I've kept it off, you know, for years now. And in fact, my editor lost 15 pounds just reading my book and editing it. Then once he understood his fat,
congratulations to him. Well, that's a great that's an editor that's probably going to stick with you for a while. That's great. Good for you.
Yeah, knowledge is power. Definitely understand your fat.
Well, good. Well, Dr. Sylvia Thayer, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to seeing you on January 5th in Washington, D.C. at the Ripley Center. And hearing more about the secret life of fat and all the science behind the body's least understood organ and what it means for you. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Good to talk to you. Join us Thursday, January 5th at 6:45 p.m. in Washington, D.C. at the Dillon Ripley Center for Sylvia Thayer and the Secret Life of Fat.